The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to episode 306 of the Talking Chop podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland. It is Sunday, September 19th, and I'm joined as often by Eric Cole. Hello, sir.
Bradford, I have missed you. I've been looking forward to talking baseball with you. great episode with Zach the other day, by the way. It sounds like we're going to be actually doing something with Zach here pretty soon, too. And I was really excited to see that you had him on the show, but I have missed you, to be sure.
I got a text from Zach. This is probably, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say this or not. It's okay. He'll have to deal with it. I got a text from Zach. I think it was Saturday afternoon, or maybe it was after the game yesterday. I can't remember. But he just calmly said, record since Zach's appearance on the podcast, 0-4. Phillies record, 4-1. And I was like, all right, Zach, no more of you on the podcast. But no, I had fun. I had fun talking to Zach. He's my friend.
I love Zach. Like, I truly, truly do. And like, you know, he's been kind of doing more of the behind the scenes stuff lately. So like, it was kind of cool to kind of, you know, hear him back at it. And,
yeah, he tweets a lot. You just don't know it. He's on the he's the one tweeting from the Valley account most of the time. So
yep. He's the one that's like shadow banning Braves fans and stuff like that too. Yep.
Legend. Anyway, so yeah,
I've outed you, Zach.
If anybody missed that podcast or anything else from the podcast feed or Road to Atlanta, which Eric hosts, or the Daily Hammer, which is usually Sean Coleman, all on the same podcast feed. So if you're a new listener, welcome aboard and please subscribe. You get three podcasts for the price of one, and that price is $0. So, all right, Eric, let us dive in to this week. It was not the best week in the world. I am glad we didn't record last night. Number one, because it would have been midnight. Yep. Or later, and also because it would have been a lot more dire. It's still not going to be the most sunshine and rainbows podcast probably of all time, but the Braves did pull out a nice win today on Sunday afternoon to kind of save the bacon a little bit. We'll get into the details, but how you feeling about the baseball right now, Eric, overall?
To be honest, it feels a little bit like regression to the mean a bit, just because like the Braves had that stretch where like they just couldn't lose a game, right? And we were all very concerned about being like, it's fortunate that, you know, no one in the National League East has really wanted to win the division all year long. But, you know, when you lose the quality of bats like Marcell Ozuna and Ronald Acuña Jr., you're just going to have stretches where like the offense just doesn't do enough. And this is also the time of the year where like you start to see, you know, teams starting to get, you know, players starting to get tired and things like that. And so this has looked at times like a tired team. It has looked like a team that has like kind of struggled to find offensive consistency out of the bullpen, which is like, again, not a weird thing to have happen late in the year. It just couldn't have happened at a worse time when, you know, the Phillies go on a bit of a run. You know, Bryce Harper is like making a very strong run for the NL MVP. And, you know, the Braves really kind of need to be able to hold them off to kind of make the end of the month a little less interesting. And instead now we find ourselves with, you know, a very, very small lead in the division and a concern that they won't necessarily be able to play. They won't be able to put another run together like they did necessarily. Like, it's just going to come down to the last weekend of the season, which might, I think it's still in play that like a game 163 is possible for this team. And, you know, that's enough for this jaded Braves fan to, you know, have a certain amount of nightmare fuel to be sure.
Yeah. I mean, they famously went 12-1 from August 8th until August 22nd. They went 12-1. The rest of the season, they are 65-69. So essentially, they've been a 500 or below team other than 2 weeks in August. And it's kind of weird to talk about because at the same time, and we'll get into this later on as well on the podcast today, but they're also pretty clearly the best team in the division. Like on paper, they have the best run differential. They have the lead right now. It's very weird to talk about, and I find myself saying that over and over again, but it's the best way that I can describe it is because this is a team that is performing and for the season is going to finish under expectations for the season, preseason. And yet they're still the favorite to win the division, and they are still pretty clearly the best quality team on paper. So it's this very strange overall campaign.
Yeah, it's a weird. It's a...
And then you throw in this week, too, which was obviously maddening. So we'll get into it, but like... For instance, and we'll fly through these because these happened a while ago, but they lose back-to-back one-run games to the Rockies at home, and the Rockies are terrible on the road. They score 6 runs in those 2 games. Just kind of not like disastrous results, but results that can sting you, especially in the middle of a race. And, I mean, it wasn't like a – I guess it wasn't a sweep, but kind of what? I mean, it ended up being a 2-game series because Thursday got rained out. And by the way, rained out's a generous term. We'll come back to this in a second. But
Yeah. Horrifically mismanaged the day before to result in basically being impossible to play that next day.
So you lose those 2 games, and that it's not the worst thing in the world on paper or in a vacuum, but given the circumstances and where you are in September, like you don't need to lose home games to the Rockies. And then, you know, Thursday's game doesn't happen. Basically, they played through 3 hours of driving rain on Wednesday, where they could have just like not played that game and played both on Thursday and been fine, probably. They pushed back 2 hours. I tweeted this when it happened, but when is the last time you saw a public announcement pregame that essentially admitted that the field wasn't going to be ready, so we're going to start 2 hours later? Like, that never happens. And then they had to postpone the game anyway.
Not in the majors.
Yeah. I mean,
as a follower of the Florida Fire Frogs for when they were the minor league, the Braves minor league affiliate, that did happen more, but obviously like we're talking about a different caliber of like a different situation entirely, right? It's minor league baseball.
Venue
like,
slash grounds crew. Yeah. It's all different.
Everything. I mean, like to call the drainage situation at a lot of these minor league parks terrible would be very generous, right? Like we see like moats that are what used to be dugouts a lot down there in the minor leagues. So like weird things like that have happened, but in the major league level, no. And it's just, our fearless leader, Chris Willis, he was like talking about this like throughout the night and that morning. He's like, there is no, the field looks terrible right now. They shouldn't be playing right now. And there's no way that field's going to be ready and dry by tomorrow. And we're all like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And then they're like, we'll push back the start time. And I'm like, I don't know. If it's a swamp, I just don't see 2 hours fixing it.
Yeah, 2 hours was not going to fix the problem. It was a weird – honestly, other than what Chris was saying, I didn't really think about it until they tweeted that it was going to be delayed 2 hours. And I was like, 2 hours is not going to fix this problem, I don't think, and then obviously it didn't. And we're talking about this now because, number one, because it's weird and funny, but also because the Rockies don't come back to Atlanta, they don't come near Atlanta again the rest of the year, and they don't have a shared off day. So, essentially, that game either isn't going to be played, which is possible, and Braves fans are hoping that it's not played, probably, or they're going to have to play it on October 4th, which is the day after the season ends. And hopefully that game, because if that game happens, it's because it has to happen and because it matters, which means suddenly you might have this like weird, you know, need to win to stay alive game against the Rockies.
Yeah, one game wild card playoff against the Colorado Rockies. In fairness, I mean, look, like this Braves team has been maddeningly bad in like one run games this year, just in general. That's not like a unique thing to the Rockies, but the Rockies had like. And I know how bad they're. I made fun of them myself because they were beating up on the Phillies in the series before they came and see the Braves. But like they've actually been playing relatively decently of late. So like, I don't want to like make too much of like how bad like Colorado's been on the road because they truly have been terrible. But like lately they've been better. But you also don't want to be in a situation where, and again, like then it gets down to like, you know, they probably have to come back to Atlanta to play that game, right? And like. That's just such a weird situation, man. Especially since like the result of that game could theoretically result in a game 163 being played against the Phillies, which would be like a true one game wild card playoff type thing. And there's a real chance this turns into a mess. So I don't know. That whole situation was obviously mishandled, and I'm sure the league had a lot to do with this. They want to make sure these games get played, particularly with, you know, the Braves having to fly out when they had to go on this West Coast series with San Francisco. Like, again, if they didn't have to go to the West Coast, they probably could have just, maybe they could have like bought more hours and then just figured it out. But like, it was a West Coast trip. Like, there's just no,
they had to go.
The handling of, the handling of game two was the biggest problem. And unfortunately, now we're kind of in a situation where a team that, like, you know, has beaten up on you a bit recently has some dangerous hitters on it at the very least, and might be motivated to spoil your season in a one game, you know, for one game. Let's just hope that game doesn't matter. Let's just kind of prayers up for that. But, you know, beyond that, you know, I don't really have big takes other than the Braves didn't look really good in that, particularly good in that series. It wasn't good. Certainly wasn't good to lose those games. But what I'm more concerned about is kind of what this could ultimately lead to at the end of the season.
Yeah, and the reason why they may not play it, other than just the obvious of, like, if the Braves are up two games in the National League East, they will have already clinched the division at that point when they could have played the game October 4th. And beyond that, this is not a season in which, you know, the NL East champion is going to be worried about playoff seeding, because they are very, very, very behind the Central champ and the West champ. So there's no, like, whoever wins the NL East will be the 3 seed. Like, there's no question about it. So that's just the reality. So there's no, like, weirdness there either. So it's essentially, if the game matters to the Braves, they'll play it. If it doesn't, they won't. And fingers crossed they don't have to play. Other than that, we'll get into Friday, because obviously the Daily Hammer has covered all those games in detail. Friday's game has not been covered on this podcast just yet. And Friday's game was a wild one. It was late. People that were watching were living and dying, but also I know it was quite late when this was all happening. But Cliff Notes version, the Braves take the lead on a 3-run homer by Travis d'Arnaud, and everyone celebrates wildly. And then, with 2 strikes and 2 outs, Will Smith, everybody's favorite son, allows a solo home run for the tie.
The Will Smith special. Yep.
Yes. So, my thoughts on Will Smith are well documented. I've been painted as a Will Smith defender, which is fine. My only take is that he's not as bad as everybody thinks he is. I still stand by that. But listen, it was not great. He allowed a game-tying home run. I will say, before I let you rebut, the Giants have been ridiculous this season at just, like, doing this. And that's not, like, an excuse for the Braves, but the Giants have, like, this Team of Destiny vibe where, like, they're not as good as everyone thinks that they should be on paper. Like, you look at the record and then the roster, and it's like, what? But the Giants just keep doing crazy stuff like this. So they did it. But let's stop here, because I have not heard your Will Smith take on a podcast. So are you in fire Will Smith into the sun mode and have him pitch in the fifth inning? What's your thoughts on the closer situation right now? Knowing that, by the way, he did save today's game. 1-2-3. Shocking.
Oh, and that sample size is going to change my opinion one way or the other. That's
I know it wouldn't, but I wanted to always preface that. Listen, he had a clean inning, and there was like a month of time when, like, the most popular phrase on Twitter was clean inning, which I don't understand when that decided to be a thing. But clean innings were a talk of the town, and hey, clean inning today.
Well, it's kind of, I have feelings about Will Smith, and you may remember this. I have similar feelings about Will Smith that I feel about. Remember when Jose Valverde was the closer for the Tigers?
Oh God! And, yes.
Like, and he was perfect. Like, leading the league in saves, which is a stat that no one should care about. And I did think that the beat writers kind of, like, in unison, you know, quoting how many saves that Will Smith has, and, like, citing his ERA as something that was good in a high leverage situation. That was silly to me. I do think that a lot of the Will Smith stuff is a bit overblown, but the same thing with Valverde is, like, it was never easy. It was always, like, a base runner or two, and, like, he had to, like, battle back, and, like, you know, like, it'd be, like, first and third with one out, and he'd, like, figure a way out of it. And, like, there's value in doing that. But I think the problem that I have with Will Smith in particular is that his problem isn't just, like, you know, it's not just like a hit and a walk. It's not, you know, like dealing with multiple base runners and just constantly being in trouble. The trouble he gets into is the long ball. And that's really problematic when you're in, like, already not good and cannot hit late in situations where you're the guy that you're bringing in ostensibly in high leverage situations, which in reality, he pitches the ninth inning. He's not, like, necessarily pitching against the heart of the lineup he's not being thrown that way. If Snitker just treats Smith as just the ninth inning guy as opposed to his best reliever against the most important part of the lineup, right?
Yep.
So, but when you have problems with your offense late in games and in close games, and the guy that's supposed to get the last three outs is a guy who is – it's not a lock that he'll give up a home run, obviously, but it's far more frequent than it should be. That is problematic. And I think that – how do I put it? I would certainly be willing to entertain the idea of giving other guys a chance. And, like, guy, look, I am shocked that I am saying these words out loud, but Luke Jackson has been legitimately good.
Yeah.
And you know, there's other guys on this roster that I might be willing to give a chance in some of these situations in the ninth inning just to, like, try to get something. Because, again, the long ball problem is a uniquely bad problem for this team because in close games, like, the mistakes that Will Smith is going to make are going to tie or lose the game. The mistakes that maybe other guys do where it's like it's far more interesting than it needs to be, that might not necessarily be the case. Now, I'm not like advocating like, you know, like bring back Josh Tomlin or anything like that. But at the same time, like, you know, maybe you look and see what you have with maybe giving Matzik a chance or something like that. Like some of these other guys that maybe don't have the exact same problems that Will Smith does, at least until they can figure out what's wrong with him. Because, again, it's just like, when he makes a mistake, it is fat and it's in the zone and it goes 430 feet away. And it's been happening fairly frequently. And that's a problem.
Yeah, he threw about a million sliders in a row, which is on Friday, which was just a bizarre choice. Like, he just finally, you know, he hung one, but it was weird. I'm not even going to give you the stats. Like, his stats are better than people think they are, but it's also maddening. And I know it. I mean,
he is not like a guy that's like they're running out there with an 8 ERA.
No, and that's like that. My whole thing is always, it's just been like the reactions to Will Smith are like he has 8 ERA and he doesn't. But I also I guess the other part of my brain understands because it's been bad and there've been high profile mess ups and home runs just stand out and he's allowed about a home run and a half per 9 innings, which is a lot. For a closer in particular. So all that stuff, like, I mean, it's not going to change pretty clearly at this moment. He's going to have to blow up some more.
Oh,
I mean,
you know, that's just his job. That's just what he's doing.
In reality, I mean, we mentioned this with Zach last week as well, but I thought it would probably take at least, just knowing Snitker as we kind of do, I thought it would probably take a couple more blowups for him to lose his job. And as we saw today on Sunday, he was ruled out there in the ninth. Granted, it was a 3-run lead, but that was a Snitker uses my closer situation, and he put him out there. So he's not lost his job yet. If he's going to lose his job, it hasn't happened yet. So there you go on that. All right, we'll leave it there. I know we did a lot on Will Smith the last couple of weeks, but I wanted to get Eric's thoughts. So you mentioned the high leverage offensive stuff. We'll get into that in a second. But the Braves go 1-2-3 in the 10th inning after the game is tied. And this is a stat that Gabe Burns tweeted out. Shouts to Gabe. The Braves, this is ridiculous. The Braves are 2-for-37 at the plate in the 10th inning this year. Now, obviously, yeah, that's one inning. But here's the deal. If you have, in this new extra innings format with a runner on second base, you are supposed to score more often than you're not supposed to score. When you go 2-for-37 in the 10th inning, there's sample size noise. I'll be the first person to say that. But it's just breathtaking. Honestly, I've looked at that stat like 10 times in the last 2 days. It's insane. 2-for-37 in the 10th inning. I don't even know what to say.
Like you say that there's sample size noise, but that's like a good number of at-bats in the 10th inning too. It's not like, you know, like over the course of like 5 seasons, because like extra inning numbers are always going to be a little weird because they just don't happen particularly frequently. Right. But at the same time, like that is really stark.
2-for-37.
And part of that, and again, something that I kind of keep coming back to in my mind is like the guys who are supposed to be among your two best hitters on the team are not playing right now. And, you know, when you're doing that and you have, you know, you basically had to like piece together a lineup with some trade deadline acquisitions that have been good, but have like some have come back to earth recently. It's not that surprising that one of the things that's the most maddening things about this team is like offensive inconsistency. And, you know, why that happens in the 10th inning and why they've decided that late in games, they've just completely forgotten the hit, I don't have a great answer to. You know, other than, you know, maybe there's, The things other than like the hitters just can't figure it out or they get gassed or something, which I find hard to believe, that other than it's just kind of a weird statistical thing, is that like maybe the scouting reports on the opposing relievers aren't doing what they need to be doing. And in regards to like how Braves hitters are supposed to be attacking them and things like that. But, you know, beyond that, it's a weird thing about this team. It's just like late in season or late in games, you just have a lead because you can't necessarily, you're not going to get those big walk-off hits from this team very often.
No, it's been weirdly bad, and I'll share some numbers in a second. As for Friday night, though, to close this loop, they actually escaped the 10th. Despite walking the bases loaded on purpose, for matchup purposes, it worked. I didn't love it, but they got out of that. Then they go 1-2-3 again in the 11th without moving the runner to third. So a runner starts in second base in the 10th and 11th inning and does not move off second base. That's really bad. And then Jacob Webb comes in, and we like Jacob Webb, but he commits an error on a pickoff throw that was a weird play. Then they intentionally walk, and then the base is loaded. And Kevin Gausman, old friend.
The revenge tour.
Pinch hit walk-off for Kevin Gausman. A bizarre game. This is nitpicky for this weekly episode, but Webb threw a 2-2 changeup to Kevin Gausman, which I don't understand. He missed with that and then kind of had to be careful 3-2 and kind of threw like a pretty fat fastball that got the end result. I just kind of went off there, but that bothered me a little bit. And with the loss, the Braves fell to 4-9 in extra innings this year. Bad for a good team.
Far cry from, you know, last year's team where they found ways to win games. They were down like 8-0 in the third inning.
It's been their trademark for like the whole, that's like one of, like, what's one of the Snicker like things that he is credited with. And you can say, you know, whether he should be or not, but yeah,
never give up, never surrender.
Yeah. I mean, and listen, that happens across baseball that the manager gets credit for that. So I'm not picking on it. It's just, that's one of the things. And this year, they've not been great in these close games, and they've kind of, that's how you end up with a run differential of like 100 when you're 77-70. So to the numbers that I teased a second ago, the high leverage offense stuff, this is all coming into today, so it's probably a little bit better than this now. But they were dead last in baseball as of last night in late close batting average. Basically, that means like seventh inning or later in a game that was close. There's a long definition, but I'll go through that later if I need to. They were hitting 185. In those situations, they're also bottom three or five in the league in OBP and slugging, OPS, all of that in late close situations. They're also 20th in baseball in high leverage, if you go by what FanGraphs describes as high leverage. So they're really bad at all of this stuff. And the one in particular that I know kills people all the time is when you have a runner on third base and less than two outs, which they had again today, by the way, and did not score, but it didn't end up mattering. They have a 45.7% scoring rate in that situation, which is 27th in baseball. So all those numbers paint the picture of what you already said, Eric, is that they've been bad at this, but the numbers, it's not just anecdotal. I feel like a lot of the time in baseball, it's a long season, you remember this stuff, and maybe it's not always true, but this one actually is true. They've just been bad in big spots all year.
Yeah, and the runner on third with less than two outs, like, that's almost become a meme with this team, right? Like, I actually, that number doesn't surprise me at all. I almost would have, like, guessed like 40%, because there seems to be a lot of situations where, you know, slow rollers that, you know, or like base running mistakes. This team has made several of those. Eddie Rosario made a particularly poor choice today, trying to run home on a ground ball that he shouldn't have been trying to. This isn't like a smart baseball, you know, chip carry, you know, just put the ball in play and hope something happens. It's like you just have to convert. Like, you have to get sac flies. You know, you have to be able to, like, get hits in spots with guys in scoring position. You know, obviously you prefer them the extra base hits and things like that, but it's just, for whatever reason, it's just, this team just has really, really struggled to do that. And, you know, some of this has been inflated a bit by a really particularly poor lineup that the Braves were having to roll out for a while there. I mean, when Ibrahim Almonte and Guillermo Heredia and guys like that are getting a lot of at-bats, you know, famously Kevin Smith, guys like that, you know, and those are the guys that come up the plate with one out with a runner on third, the results are very often not going to be very good. So, like, some of that's inflated by that. It doesn't necessarily reflect the current state of the Braves lineup, but at the same time, we saw that situation happen today. They spent most of the week not being able to get much done offensively. It's you know, it's definitely a thing that's a problem. And, you know, if they really wanted to kind of, you know, make a run and hold off the quote unquote surging Phillies, and, you know, possibly make some noise in the playoffs, like, they're going to have to figure out how to basically hit relievers, because that's been the biggest problem. It's like they seem like they can always put runs up on starters, but against relievers, like, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's a scouting report problem or if it's just, you know, whatever it is, whatever weird voodoo that's a curse has been put on them, they just haven't been able to get the job done.
Yeah, I don't really have any analysis other than the fact that this is a lineup that definitely, particularly post deadline, and we love what they did at the deadline. It's obviously helped them quite a bit. But guys like Soler and Duvall and Peterson do not help you in the situational hitting categories. Those guys are power guys. And I'm not complaining about that. Those guys are upgrades on what you had. But when you factor in those guys plus what they already had, it does make some sense. Now, I think they have been worse than you would expect at the same time in these situations. But this is not a lineup that I would describe as being extremely well built for, like, getting a single when you need it kind of lineup. You know what I mean? It's more of a boom bust kind of lineup, and that's okay.
Bring back Markakis.
I'm not
Bring
saying
back
that
Markakis.
Whatsoever. But it is worth pointing out. It's not even a criticism. I just think that you kind of get what you get on some level, even if there is this is worse than we would have thought, even with all those caveats. All right, before we get to Saturday and Sunday, and there's a lot to get to in those 2 days, plus a look ahead to the rest of the season. By the way, there's 2 weeks left in the season. All that said, we'll get to that in a second, but first, a word from our sponsors on the podcast today.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out. Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on, and there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know, it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All right, Eric. Saturday, less fun, less exciting. 2-0 loss. Honestly, not a whole lot to like pick apart. Morton was pretty good, not dominant, but pretty good. Bullpen was good. They didn't score. And both Giants runs scored on a 59-mile-an-hour flare to right field. That is on brand for all parties involved. The Giants just like do this stuff. But again, 59-mile-an-hour flare for both runs in the game.
Well, it was made worse by the fact that like Freddie Freeman hit a ball 110 miles an hour, and that was a double play. And
yep. It was one of those nights.
Especially if we remember some of those early season games where it just felt like the Braves were just hitting the crap out of the balls right at guys every single night. Like that is what that game felt like. It was just a lot of hard outs, just couldn't get. I mean, like, Brendan Crawford's made some good plays in this series too. And it's just that one did not feel good at all, because it felt like, even though it was a 2-0 loss and you can rightfully blame the offense for not getting the job done and ultimately converting, because again, they even had some chances despite some of those loud outs. They just didn't convert. But at the same time, like, a lot of those outs they had gotten that could have really kept some innings going just were some really unfortunate bad luck. So it is what it is.
Yeah, it's just one of those nights. And they had a huge chance in the third. They had first and third with no outs, and 4, 5, 6 the lineup coming up, and they didn't score a run. Like, those are ones where you just can't have that. I mean, there's no excuse to not score a run in that situation, and that just didn't happen. And with that said, that was their fourth straight loss. They scored five, they lost those four games by a total of 5 runs. It was 3 1-run losses and a 2-run loss. And at the same time as those were happening, Philadelphia won 4 in a row. So as of Saturday night, late, the lead in the division was down to 1. And by the way, it could still be 1 at the end of today because Philadelphia is playing right now as we're talking. So we don't have the result of that, but they're actually leading at the moment as we record this at 1-0 in the fourth inning. So nightmarish stuff. And as was teased earlier on in the podcast, Sunday, the win definitely helps to buttress the feeling on this podcast. Before we get into the game, what did you think of Snicker going back to Jock Peterson leading off for the first time since September 1st and only the second time since July 31st? So Peterson has not been leading off for like 7 weeks now, and today was the day they changed that.
Well, I mean, he played well today, so that was always good. I think the bigger problem is just that Ozzie hasn't been performing very well in the leadoff spot, and he historically hasn't just been that guy. He's not like a big – he's certainly not a draw-your-walks guy. That he goes up there hacking, and, you know, let's be clear. I'm pro Ozzie Albies, but, you know, in terms of being a leadoff hitter, it's just not something that's necessarily suited him, I don't think, and yep. That's kind of – now, in fairness, too, I mean, Jock hasn't hit particularly well either, so – you know, it never felt like there was a particularly easy solution other than just going strictly play your best hitters at the top of the lineup and get the most at-bats for them, which right now would be like Freddie Freeman 1, Austin Riley 2, which I will guarantee you that there's no chance at all that Brian Snicker is going to pack Freddie Freeman leadoff. So
no.
It's just never going to happen. So I like the doing a bit of a change and, you know, trying to get Jock going. And he had a good game today, so it seems like it kind of worked out, but like this, I was never in the camp of like, you know, you absolutely have to make this change and put Jock back because like Jock wasn't hitting particularly well. And that's not necessarily if a guy's really scuffling, he's not necessarily the guy that you want to be running out there, you know, as your first hitter, getting the most at bats in the game either. So, again, nice to him. I mean, trying to get something going, making a bit of a change. This is a team that lost 4 games in a row and, you know, for at least today it worked out.
Yeah. I didn't mind any of it. We've long said that they do not have an ideal leadoff hitter without Ronnie. That's still the case, so I'm fine with shaking it up. I thought it was at least noteworthy because it just hasn't happened in a while. And then they win the game. So it kind of had the same vibe as Saturday for a while, just some blown opportunities. They actually wasted, I believe, 3 extra base hits in the first like 5 innings without scoring a run. And then Adam Duvall and Eddie Rosario go back-to-back to give the Braves the lead that they would never relinquish. And the 2 lead stories other than the win were Max Fried was awesome in this game. 7 innings of scoreless baseball. And Eddie Rosario hit for the cycle, which is like...
Yeah, it snuck up on me. It came out of nowhere. I didn't even think... I honestly had forgotten that like he only needed the single when he got it in the ninth. So
I'll be honest. I had a note on the doc that we used for the podcast that said Rosario had double, triple home run. And I was watching football and doing other things and it was on. And then I saw it. I didn't even see him get it, actually, live. It was on the TV, but I wasn't looking at it at the time. And I'm like, oh, that's a cycle. I had this whole, like, thing. Like, oh, he just hit
that was
for the
sneaky.
Cycle. So, shout out to Eddie Rosario. Like, the cycle, you know, I'm not the biggest, like, cycle guy, but it's still rare. Like, it doesn't happen every day. Like,
yeah, it's a very weird,
cool thing that he gets to say that he did in the major leagues. And that was awesome. And it came in a win. And a big win. That was very helpful. His home run helped them win. And then Adam Duvall, by the way, still leads the National League in RBI. He has 36 home runs. He has an active 15-game winning streak. So, hit streak. Adam Duvall, legend.
Yep, he was great. Braves wouldn't pay him $5 million.
Non-tender. No, but honestly, it was a perfect storm. I mean, Max Fried with a huge, huge effort today that cannot be overlooked. To keep it at 0-0 as long as it was. I'm sure had some, you know, mental help for the Braves because they couldn't score. I think they scored 1 run in like 25 innings since Friday night to like the 7th today. Basically, they just couldn't score, and it was very helpful to have Max go out there and just basically throw a gem. That was massive. And again, I don't want to overstate it, but it was to this moment the biggest start of the season by anyone on the mound for the Braves, and he threw a gem. So there you go.
Yeah, he was awesome. I wish that Max was missing more bats like he kind of was in previous years, but he's really done a good job this year of just like managing games and like he's been doing a good job about getting weak contact. So like the starts aren't like the sexy like 10 innings, you know, 10 strikeouts and 6 inning type starts anymore, or hasn't been this year. But he's like done a. I think he's been a surprisingly good for this season based on, like, you don't necessarily think about it until you start looking at the numbers and look at the starts he's had to put up for the Braves. And he's just been consistently good, and they've needed him to be, with, you know, Mike Soroka out, and they've, you know, they've really kind of had these guys hurt, or, you know, rotating in and out of that, out of the rotation with injuries, and or just not playing particularly well. So, well, you know, I continue to have high hopes for Max. I have thought highly of him ever since he was in the minor leagues. You know, just pitched really, really well in a spot that the Braves really, really need him to. Because again, Braves don't, if the Braves lose this game today, there is a very good chance, particularly since the Phillies' opponent today is the Mets, who, if there's a team that wants to win the division less than the Phillies, it's the Mets. So, it was good to see. It was good to see a good. I mean, Will Smith was legitimately very good in the ninth inning too. So both of those things were great. You know, Eddie Rosario's cycle, you know, I would be an advocate of a little bit of an asterisk, because if you get a triple and then you toop land yourself out of a run, you know, then, you know, maybe that needs to be made note of. But beyond that, like, I mean, a cycle is a, you know, by any measure, a really good game. So, you know, really happy for him. Duvall's always been nuts. They need to bring him back and, you know, just stop messing around with him, because he is, you know, I don't think he's not like a lock of an everyday player or anything like that. He certainly has his warts as a player, but, you know, that dude comes up with big home runs. He's come up in big spots for this team in multiple seasons now. So just bring him back. He's a guy worth keeping around.
Yeah, Duvall's been ridiculous. I will say Max Free had a slow start to the season. His ERA is 3.31 now. Like, he's come all the way around.
Super, super, super consistent.
Yeah, I don't think I even realized it until I looked it up just now. I was thinking probably a little bit higher than that in the threes. But, you know, last year he was famously awesome and was their only starting pitcher basically for like 3 months. But this year, I think he just threw everybody off the scent.
Erlin years.
Yeah, that early hiccup threw everybody off the scent, including me. But, you know, an ERA in the 3.3s is nothing to sneeze at for Max. So he's been awesome this year. Okay, let's look ahead a little bit now. As I said a second ago, we're recording this. It's about 9 p.m. Eastern on, Sunday the 19th. So the Mets and Phillies are playing the night game. So my apologies for not waiting this out, but Eric can't be up till midnight. I can't ask him to do that.
I'm old. I'm sorry, guys.
It's okay. So we're recording without knowledge of that result. With that said, there are two scenarios. So the lead will be either one or it'll be two. At the end of the night, if the Phillies win, the Braves will be leading by one in the National League East. If the Phillies lose and they're winning right now 1-0, it'll be two. At this moment, with the result unclear, 538 has the Braves to win the division at 69%, a very nice total, and then 73% to make the playoffs. Worth noting, Phillies still has the easiest remaining schedule in baseball by a lot. They play Baltimore and Pittsburgh in the next 7 games. Then they play the Braves, of course, and then they end with the Marlins. So Philly has a breezy schedule. The Braves don't have the hardest schedule in the world, but it's not the Philly schedule. So all that to say, the Braves are still favored to win the division, both because they're leading the division and because of team quality. Oh, I did tweet this today before the game started. Eric, you'll love to know this. The Pecota, our friends at BP, as of this morning, had the Braves not favored to win the division, despite leading it. So they love the Braves.
Well, I mean, Baseball Prospectus hasn't predicted the Braves to win the division in like 4 years now, and, you know, that's not worked out particularly well.
They had them favored until yesterday, until last night. They changed it back to Philly. I think it'll probably be back to the Braves after they won today, but it was pretty funny to me. I always laughed at that.
Well, I mean, you know, I have strong thoughts about Pecota. I'm pretty sure they designed that system. My conspiracy theory is, like, they look at the Mets roster and then they design a system based on, like, what would make them the most likely to win the division. But that's a different question entirely. You know, and these projection systems, especially with a race this tight, I mean, honestly, they could very well be right just based on, like, the ease of Philly's
system. Beat the Mets.
I need the Mets to not be the Mets tonight. But ultimately, like, when we're talking about a 1 or 2 game lead, like, anything can happen. That series against the Braves is the one that you circle.
Yeah.
You know, projection systems aside, like, you win that series against Philadelphia, you got to.
Well, especially when you, okay,
that's
if you,
what you need to do.
At minimum, on Monday morning, the Braves will have the division lead. It'll be 1 or 2. With that said, they're favored, in my view, regardless of the result tonight in the Philly game, because I think, and I think you think as well, the Braves are the best team and they'll have the lead. With that said, that division, I mean, that series against Philadelphia might well decide this thing. If you go out and get swept by the Phillies, you're in trouble. If you sweep the Phillies, it'd be very hard for the Braves to sweep the Phillies and also not win the East at this point. It's not possible. It'd be hard to do. So that would be a big series.
And with the Braves' noted historical dominance on these West Coast trips that they're currently on.
Yeah.
So I think that's in the cards, to be honest with you.
It's possible. I'm saying, if you told me right now the Braves sweep the Phillies in that 3-game series, the Braves become like a 90% favorite to win the division. If we knew that, we obviously don't. But, you know, there's a lot of damage that can be done pro or con in that series. This is a weird week, though, before we get to that series, because, you know, if the Braves finish up with the National League East roundup of Phillies and Mets next week. But the coming week is a weird one. So it's actually a 7.5 game week, technically, for the Braves. Yep. They play 4 in Arizona beginning on Monday. And then they finish this week with 3+ games in San Diego, because Friday is kind of a doubleheader. They're resuming a suspended game from July 22nd on Friday against San Diego, and the Braves are trailing 5-4 as the home team in the bottom of the fifth. So they're playing a home game in San Diego. Yes, you heard me correctly. As the early game on Friday. And then they were actually down 5-0 in that game and came back to 5-4, so maybe they'll come back. But a weird one. So they'll have 8 results this week, hopefully, barring weather. But it's going to be interesting. You know, Arizona's not very good, but you're going out there. The rotation is now set, at least except for Tuesday. So that's the next question I wanted to ask you. Monday, they have Enoa scheduled to pitch, and then Wednesday, Anderson, Thursday, Morton. Tuesday is still TBD at this moment, unless they've changed it in the last hour and I didn't see it. TBD. And there are only so many options for this start, because Kyle Muller pitched Saturday in Gwinnett. Kyle Wright pitched today for Gwinnett. Drew Smiley pitched 1 inning in relief on Saturday. Now, I guess that could have been a side session of sorts, but he did pitch on Saturday. And Tukey's been dreadful lately. We are a pro Tukey podcast, but 11 runs, 9 earned in his last 3 starts in only 10 innings. So his ERA is something like, you know, 8.5. It's bad. Eric, what do they do on Tuesday? Because that's not, it's like kind of a pretty, it's a pretty big game, and they don't really have anybody to pitch on Tuesday.
I think that the smart move for me anyway is like have Tukey start it, but treat it like a bullpen game.
With Smiley ready to go behind him? That's what I would do. Or at least I might even start Smiley, honestly. I trust Smiley. Well, I trust Smiley more than Tukey. My apologies to everyone. I trust Smiley more.
That's closer than it should be right now for me. And I don't have a particularly strong preference either way, because I think that I would have such a short hook on both of those guys.
Agreed. The problem is, I agree with you, but also you're playing 7.5 games in 7 days. So I know Snit is not going to want to wear his bullpen out a ton this week, because they just don't have the bandwidth to really do that. That's at least part of the calculus, I think.
I no longer care about that the last 2 weeks of the season.
I agree with you. I'm thinking out loud on what he might be thinking about. Yeah. Like,
well, I think he hopes that Tukey is good.
Can pitch 5.
And then he goes 5.
Yeah.
But based on everything we've seen from Tukey for, well, most of his career.
Yeah, unfortunately.
That he's not that guy. He's had starts where he's gone 5 or 6 and we're like, wow, Tukey really needed that one. Maybe this is where the turnaround happens. And maybe that start happens on Tuesday. I'd be thrilled if it happens. That's not going to change my prognosis on Tukey long term. And you have a chance with that with Tukey, whereas, and in Drew Smiley's case, like, there's a chance that happens too. But I've also been pretty vocal about the fact that I wouldn't necessarily be interested in seeing Drew Smiley, you know, especially 2 times through the order, but 1 time through the order lately has been, you know, skeptical.
Not ideal. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's going to be interesting, because, you know, a lot of the projections, and there was nothing announced that they might have like that kind of bullpen-ish game on Monday, but now it's going to be on regular rest, so we don't really know or even have an indication what they're going to do on Tuesday. But that's one to circle for sure. I'm looking at the betting market to see. Yeah, the Braves are currently favored in the couple of places for Monday's game, even with
you gambling degenerate.
Well, I'm just trying to give people the information.
Hey, well, follow the money if you want to find the best information.
That's the thing to do. I believe in that wholeheartedly. So, I mean, realistically speaking, the Padres have been like kind of in free fall. They're still very talented, but they're not playing great, and that's over the weekend. Arizona, we kind of know the deal there. They're not great at all. You need to go out and post some results this week. I mean,
yep, you have to win the Arizona series.
There's eight games. Okay, I'll frame it this way to be positive. How many wins would satisfy you this week, knowing that they will play eight games?
5-3.
Yeah, that's probably what I would say as well. And you know, there is a small caveat that they are probably projected to lose that early game on Friday, knowing that they're down a run in what?
Yeah, they're handicapped a run, and they only have four innings to make up that.
Yeah, so you would imagine it's obviously winnable, but that's the one game on the schedule this week where you're like definitely the underdog, and maybe against the Padres, depending on the matchups, they could have another one where they go in as underdog. But regardless, I think 5-3 would be
any
good.
Any series against a team that has both Manny Machado and Fernando Tatis Jr. on it is spooky.
Yeah, I mean, they're not playing great, but there's a reason everyone thought they were going to be right in the middle of it all year long in the West. I think they're going to probably pitch Jake Arrieta, though, who's probably the worst pitcher in baseball. So that's helpful. He's on the schedule, at least in terms of the projected TBDs. So I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, I tend to agree. I think 5-3 is a good result. And if they go 5-3, you know, nothing's assured, but I'm pretty confident they'll still have the lead a week from now if they go 5-3. Philly has been good lately, and they, you know, they might even win tonight. Again, they're currently winning. It's 2-0 now in the fifth against the Mets. So maybe they'll just keep winning every day, but I think they're probably going to cool off at some point. So if you go 5-3 this week, I feel pretty good.
Yeah. One other game that I was kind of looking at when we were talking about projected starters, one guy who hasn't been particularly good this year, but has a quote-unquote no-hitter against the Braves this year, is Braves beat writer favorite Madison Bumgarner. So,
oh, God. I forgot about that.
So, you know,
and Merrill
again,
Kelly.
This is a spooky week for me because, like, theoretically, I think that the Braves should be able to go 5-3. I think that they're better than both those teams. As constituted right now, I mean, San Diego's pitching situation is like, you know, notably dreadful.
Yep.
But again, Arizona's certainly a better team at home than they've been on the road, and you know they beat up on the Phillies for a while. So this is a spooky week. I still think the Braves can go 5-3, but there's cause to at least clench up a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, I sort of talked around it because Arizona, like famously, like you just referenced, did beat up on the Phillies. They are the worst team in the National League this year by eight games right now. They are 48-101. They are the second worst team in the majors, and they're only a game ahead of Baltimore for the worst record in the league. So Arizona is bad. Unequivocally, they're bad.
Sweeping that series is something that should theoretically, like, that would not be a surprising result, and that'd be a very welcome
result. But yeah, the thing is, like, you can never I don't think in baseball you can really project a four-game sweep, but you can project 3-1 against the Diamondbacks. Now, it doesn't mean it's going to happen, but given the team quality, the Braves are definitely trying. The Diamondbacks are certainly in wait till next year mode at this point in time. You know, 3-1 should be the expectation against Arizona, whereas, you know, 4-0, you can't really, like, say that's going to happen. I mean, it's definitely on the table as possible, but I don't think there's a team really ever that you can project a 4-0 result against in baseball. But 3-1, I think, is a safe projection. If you maybe, like, guess the result of that series with my life on the line, I'd say 3-1 Braves. So we'll see.
Yeah, but I will say that at anything less than 5-3 is disappointing, and I wouldn't say full panic mode, but
I mean, the big problem.
You need to make it up.
Yeah, the big problem is, in addition to Philly just playing better than they have really all year, is that Philly plays Baltimore and Pittsburgh at home this week. And as I just said, Baltimore's the worst team in the league. Pittsburgh is on the short list of worst teams in the league, and those are all home games. So Philly could lose those games. Philly's capable of it. We've seen them against Arizona flop. But on paper, Philly's supposed to win more than they lose this week, just at a minimum. So,
yep.
It's
this is the, like, you're basically trying to hold ground and then.
Yeah, you want to go into the series. You want to go into that series when they come to Atlanta the following week. If you're winning the division, even if it's by one, if you're winning the division as they arrive, you are the favorite to win the division.
Yep.
If you're not winning the division at that point, anything's possible, and that means this week is big, because if the Phillies hang on and win tonight, the lead's won, and that means the margin of error is very low. That's just kind of what it is. It's the reality of the situation, and I still pick the Braves to win the division as of right now. They're favored to do so in the metrics and the projections that I trust more. They're not hugely favored anymore. Like, they had a watermark where they were like in the 80%+ range to win the division, yep. And now it's like closer to 60, which is not a small drop. But do you agree, Eric? I feel like you probably do, but do you agree that they're the favorite still?
I think they're the favorite just because I also just don't trust Philly in general. Like, you know, they're a streaky team. It's certainly spooky with this, it being this close, and there's a series that they had to play against the Braves, right? Like, that's an easy place for them to make up ground. But, you know, I still think the Braves are a better team, which is really the kind of the most important consideration for me, especially since, like, there's certainly some, in theory, softer parts on both team schedules. Like, the Braves should be favored against the Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks may not be as bad as Baltimore, for example, but, you know, and the Padres certainly aren't as bad as, like, Pittsburgh is, but neither of those teams are playing particularly well. So you should at least be able to keep pace with Philadelphia over the course of those games. Ideally, you make up some ground, and then all of a sudden things get a lot less hairy. But, you know, again, I am quietly hopeful that, you know, they can get it done, and I am optimistic, although I am certainly spooked a little bit.
Quietly hopeful, yet optimistic and spooked. Eric has run the gamut of emotions.
Yeah, I'm all over this podcast.
I think we're all kind of in the same frame here. I mean, I'm in my Atlanta sports doomsday mode. I kind of reverse jinxed Adam Duvall's home run today because I had just tweeted, let's see how the Braves blow this opportunity to score a run with a lead after a leadoff double by Austin Riley. So I'm certainly in my bag.
Right on. On brand. Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
We're all there now. Like, nothing's going to be, I mean, we were all hoping that this was like a comfortable win. It still could be, but it's less likely now than it was a couple weeks ago. A lot's changed for the worse. But still, they're in a good spot. And, you know, to be famously optimistic as we are on this podcast, if you told us 2 months ago the Braves would be winning the division right now and in control, that would be a win. So
yeah, I would not pick that to happen. I think you and I like were right in that 10% range. It's like they were down and they lost Ronnie and
they were famously in that range even in the projection models. They were, you know, when you started factoring in the loss of Acuna and the continued absence of Ozuna and all that stuff, like, they were not supposed to be here, and then they had the run of all runs and they won 12 of 13 games and we're back to them being kind of in the middle again. So we'll see, Eric, but a lot to talk about. This is sort of a nuts and bolts podcast because we're getting down to brass tacks. I mean, we'll get into playoff stuff. But for now, we're kind of chronicling the journey. I know you have Road to Atlanta coming in the next couple of days, probably, but the minor league season's like kind of ending with a thud, unfortunately, because of like weather and weirdness.
Yeah, look, Gwinnett got played, so we're excited about that. But beyond that, other than, you know, kind of this last recap of all the quote unquote games today, which is kind of the end of the regular season for the minor leagues, Gwinnett continues to play. They play for a couple more weeks, and then Mississippi has a playoff run. So however long that lasts. So that's going to be kind of how our minor league season is going to wind down. It's kind of a bummer that this recap, you know, this day was kind of coming to an end. This weekend has been particularly challenging with, you know, just weather in general. But I do want to take a moment to thank my staff over on the minor league side, Garrett, Garav, Matt, Wayne. I can't ask for any better. I just can't. These guys, we recap every single minor league game every single year. We've done it since 2015, and those guys are amazing. They commit themselves to this every year. This is certainly the part of the year where we're particularly tired and, you know, kind of looking forward to a little bit of kind of the rest on the recap side of things. But it'll only be a couple weeks and they'll be itching to talk about minor league baseball again. But I just want to, you know, take some time to thank them for all their hard work. They they've really grinded this season now, and you know, from the big events like the draft, and you know, just kind of, you know, dealing with our big ranking projects and stuff like that, to just the nuts and bolts, recapping the games each and every day, they're the best, and I can't thank them enough.
I would echo that wholeheartedly, same to you, my friend, for all the work that you do as well. It's been, I say this all the time on the podcast, but if you're a new listener that hasn't heard me say it, I would say much of my minor league knowledge, as small as it is, comes from reading and listening to you guys. I am not a huge consumer of minor league baseball, other than reading our stuff and listening to Road to Atlanta, and I feel like I know more than I used to know about all of this stuff because of you guys, so thank you for your service. And you get that podcast again free, and all the written content is also free at talkingchop.com. So, Eric, thank you, my friend, for joining me. If you have any final thoughts, please feel free to share them, but you can be found at Leprechaun on Twitter, I believe, something like that.
Wow, I've already forgotten my Twitter handle.
I'm kidding. I typed it already on the spot. I typed it in the thing already.
Go ahead and send all of your Atlanta Falcons and Michigan football takes. Send them to @BTRoland.
Oh, hey, when is the Jesse Franklin 5-part retrospective series coming on TalkingChop.com? Is that somebody writing that now, or what's going on?
When he starts hitting again, how about that?
That's unfortunate. Listen, there was a lot of fun where he hit a home run like every night for 3 weeks. It was fun.
Yeah, he was. What a ride that was. Yeah.
Thank you, sir, again, sincerely. But please subscribe to this podcast, everybody. Follow Eric's work. Follow the site's work at TalkingChop.com and also at TalkingChop on Twitter. Follow me if you'd like to at @BTRoland. And once again, please subscribe to the show. Leave 5-star feedback. Tell your friends. If you have Brave fan friends in your life that do not know about the podcast, share it with them. We really appreciate spreading the word in that way. And hopefully we'll have playoff episodes. I'm not going to jinx it. I'm saying that we're definitely going to have playoff episodes, but hopefully we'll be covering a playoff team in a couple weeks. But until then, we'll be chronicling it all. So subscribe. See you next time.